Let's see. Should we won't go around the table. How should we do it this time? I'm with Ken and Joseph and Sarah.
Now I'm in the middle and everybody feels awkward.
That's right.
I promise to keep my hands to myself.
Last time on this program, ladies and gentlemen, if you remember, we were talking about history. Why do we need to know? Why should we care about history? And we were talking about some of the laws that the acts that Britain had acted on the colonies and what was making them so mad that they finally decided to go ahead and fight about it. Because they tried for a long time not to do that. There were lots of people saying, Britain is still the mother country. We don't want independence. No, we're not talking about independence. We're just talking about being treated fairly. So what was making them so upset that it eventually led to that? So some of the acts, the Sugar Act was about taxes. Currency Act was about money. The Stamp Act was about more taxes. There were the Townshend Revenue Act of 1768 was taxes on more stuff. And one of them, at the end of last show, I sort of mentioned the Quartering Act, and I said we'd talk about that again later. We don't have to go into detail on that. But the idea was that because the colonies were so far away from Britain, they had to send troops over. They thought they did. After the French and Indian War, Britain decided to keep troops on the continent. And in order to do that, you have to feed and house them. And because Britain was broke, and it's only fair that the colonists pay their fair share of being so nicely protected by the British.
It's all for your safety.
Yes, it was all for their safety. So you get to help pay for this, and you also get to help house them. So the Quartering Act, I think sometimes it gets talked about as though Britain was imposing soldiers on people's private houses so they could just come along and go, hey, you have an extra room. You're going to put a soldier in there. No, I don't want to. Too bad. You don't have a choice.
Right. But at that point, it really wasn't your private house anymore. It pretty much belonged to the government if they were quartering soldiers.
But they were not putting them in people's houses.
Okay.
So what the act was about, there were barracks in certain places where they had soldiers typically, or where they might have them or whatever, or maybe they would decide they were going to move troops and they would build barracks or something like that. So there were some in the Boston area that were sort of on an island off somewhere. And part of the problem with that was that the troops were quartered in these barracks, but they were too far away from Boston to have anything to do with anything that was going on to actually be policing. So I don't know where all the barracks were, but they had them. The part of the act was saying, let's say there's not enough room in the barracks for all the soldiers that we want. Then you're going to house them in inns and other, let me find my spot here.
Airport parking garages.
If there shall not be sufficient room in said barracks for the officers and soldiers, then and in such case only, to quarter and billet the residue of such officers and soldiers, which I don't know how you feel about being called residue, but those
poor
guys.
Not the first time. I've been called way worse.
For whom there shall be no room in such barracks, in inns, livery stables, ale houses, victualling houses, and the houses of sellers of wine by retail to be drank in their own houses, or places thereunto belonging, in all houses of persons selling of rum, brandy, strong water, cider, or metheglin, by retail to be drank in houses, and in case there shall not be sufficient room, then they were to make room for them in those houses. I guess maybe considering them public houses, you're selling stuff, you're already in the retail business. But then if there wasn't enough room there, then they were going to hire, the bottom of that part says, they are thereby required to take and hire and make fit for the reception of His Majesty's forces, such and so many uninhabited houses, outhouses, barns, and other buildings as shall be necessary to quarter or therein the said residue.
How many soldiers can you fit in an outhouse?
I don't know, but you're supposed to make it fit habitation for them.
I was just thinking about what could possibly go wrong with housing soldiers in an alehouse.
Yeah, there's no way that could go wrong.
No, that seems like the best deal.
Even if they're not in your house, if you have a piece of land without buildings, let's say, because that's what we call them around here, and there are soldiers in your barn or in your stable or whatever, you're still kind of expected to feed them, to let them take water from your well. That's still very personal and intimate and invasive.
Right. So let's say they're not in your house, but they're in your barn and they're in the loft or whatever. And you've had to make that habitable, which means that now whatever you were using that for, you can't use that for without being rude to each other. And I suppose that, you know, we can't assume that all of the soldiers were being jerks about this. But what they say about guests who stay longer than 3 days are like fish. Pretty soon they get rotten. Besides the fact that they did feel like they were in charge, you know, you're just the colonists and we're the British soldiers and we can do whatever we want. But there were provisions for them having to be fed and given a certain amount of small beer and cider and things like that. And there's also, they weren't supposed to all be doing this for free. They were going to get paid for it. But if we have an imagination and can think about how that would work, let's say that Sheridan is sitting in a place convenient for commerce because we're right here on the border by the
port of entry.
Yes, we're right by the port of entry on the interstate, which we are. Okay, so Boston was a particular hot spot because it was the place where all the ships were coming in. So imagine that we are a particular hot spot because of commerce and that we have soldiers housed in the fair at the fairgrounds. Well, there's a little bit of an overflow, so we need to put them in some of the hotels. But there's still more overflow, so we're going to go around and start conscripting people's barns and unused buildings. Okay, so uninhabited. And so there, maybe you're not using it the way you somebody else thinks you ought to be, but it's still yours. But the government is saying, you're going to use that for soldiers. It's not in your house. What are you griping about? You don't have to feed them for free. We're going to pay you after you fill out this requisition form and turn it in and stamp it, pay the Stamp Act on all of the paperwork and give it to this guy who's going to pass it up to this guy who's going to give it to the governor who's going to put it on a ship and send it to the parliament and get it okayed for your payment. Until that happens, there's still a certain amount of food and drink that you're supposed to be providing for them.
Yeah, for a year. Without pay.
What if you're running something?
Those boat
like,
rides weren't quick.
Right.
If you're running something like an inn or a public house, you make your profit by renting out those rooms to people who are paying full price. I cannot imagine that the King of England was going to pay full price for those inns. So they're losing money, even if they manage to get those requisitions responded to. They're losing money on that. And they're feeding these soldiers who knows how much. And I've tried to feed rowdy groups of men, and it's always, hey honey, put another free drink over here, why don't you give me a little extra gravy or whatever. So you could, if you think in terms of cost to profit ratio or something like
business.
If you think in terms of business, you're losing a lot of money because other people aren't staying at your inn, and these people will take advantage of you, especially if they were there for more than a couple of days.
But who could you complain to? I mean, the king basically owned everything.
Right. And he wasn't around.
And you're functioning just because I allow you to do so.
There are so many aspects to that that you could imagine happening, even if this act were totally laid out where here's how it's going to work. And it will be smooth because the British officers who are honorable are in charge and they'll be watching their men and they won't let any hanky-panky go on in the barns and all those kinds of things. If you know human nature, you understand the problem.
Your livestock is safe with these men.
Right. They would never...
Yeah.
And they would never just decide they wanted an extra chicken dinner and go chop the head off of your rooster or something and make a pot of chicken soup out in your backyard. That would never happen. And some of the things that we maybe don't think about is the way people had to do things back then. It wasn't like everybody in their separate houses had all of the appliances that we had for refrigeration and for cooking and baking and all those kinds of things. You had to go to people who could do those things for you, and they would then all of a sudden be responsible. Maybe the bakers all of a sudden have orders for all these loaves of bread for all the soldiers. And so you're at the end of the line waiting for yours, and you get there, you wanted your loaf of bread, and they're out. So we don't need to go into detail on all of these acts and what everything was taxed and all the things that were happening. If you have any imagination and know anything about people, you can come up with your own scenarios of why this would be a bad idea. So just imagine that you're a business owner, and like some of the people downtown who have their stores on the street and they have maybe rental housing upstairs. All of a sudden, you have an empty one, you don't rent it to the next person who comes along with full, who can pay full price rent that you're asking. The government's going to take that and say, you're going to put six soldiers in there. And by the way, you're going to make sure that they're well fed and have plenty to drink. A certain amount. It does say how much, but for these people, as long as they're in there. There was a limit to some of these. Some of the acts were only for a year or two. That's a long time if you're feeding soldiers for free and waiting for your compensation.
Right. And you might not get that compensation in the first 2 years because, like I said, the boat ride is awfully long to get it approved.
And if you've ever done it, had any dealings with trying to get money from the government, you can imagine them, you know, like, who do you complain to?
Especially if you're in arrears on any taxes.
Yeah. So rather than beating that horse to death, I wanted to relate this to something that I heard Walter Williams say on the documentary about his life called Suffer No Fools. He said, the reason why slavery is immoral or rape or murder is immoral is because it violates private property. So if you start with the idea of self-ownership, then you can say what is moral and what is immoral. And so this, here's the basis of the problem, is the colonists were saying, but this is our stuff. And the king is saying, no, it's my stuff, like we were talking about before. But where is that line then, where it's your right to finally stand up and say, that's my stuff?
It's not the stuff. It's the principle.
It's the freedom. That idea of personal property, of owning something, is fundamental to liberty. If you don't have the ability to possess anything, there's no liberty.
I would tie it into what's going on in today's world with COVID-19. Whenever your government comes in and starts shutting down businesses and telling you what you can and cannot do with your time and with even your family anymore, I think it's about time that you say, hey, I think the government's crossed a line there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it doesn't seem like there's anything that they are unashamedly coming after. They came after our businesses, they came after our personal health choices, and now they're coming after our guns, even though they said they wouldn't. We all knew they would, and they're doing it. And so at what point do you finally decide this is not just an inconvenience, this is a moral issue, and we have to stand up and do something about it?
Barack Obama said it the best, and if you don't take this literally, then you're kind of an idiot. That's not yours. You didn't build that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that your government officials are looking at you. It's not yours. It's ours. We're just letting you have it for the time.
And I think it's interesting, too, when you correlate it with that, that we're going to take your business and your livelihood from you. But don't worry, because the government will come in and give you $600.
Right.
Some of these acts start out with a statement that in order to make the colonists more dependent on the British government, here's what we're going to do. That's what we're talking about, more dependence on the government. And when did we start going, oh, yeah, thank goodness the government will take care of me. It's okay. Do whatever you want.
Now there are even rumblings that the government is going to go around and buy up all the foreclosures and then rent them out to us for a generous price.
Nice.
Wait a second. The government is going to be my landlord? Like living in the slums or the ghettos?
Have you been to the DMV? This is going to suck. I got a leaky pipe.
Where's the government getting the money to buy those foreclosures?
Right.
From you. I think it's mine.
You're giving them the money to buy your foreclosed home.
Right.
I've been to Pattonville.
Nobody else has.
You,
so that
you
was
may
great.
Have to clarify that, because it's probably not even there anymore.
It's just soldiers housing in Europe, and like anything else, because there's, whenever you have a group of people together, there's going to be graft and corruption. The money that is spent to maintain said housing got filtered through all kinds of other projects and other pockets and other places. And so being grossly inefficient, anybody who is good at doing things does it out in the real world, on the block, we would say. And so the people that are stuck in government generally have no idea how the real world works. And they know the bureaucracy. They know being able to filter and skim things. I worked in logistics. We were procuring replacement parts for vehicles and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there was so much just graft, so much skimming.
And then those people get used to being paid for doing nothing.
Yeah.
And they're outraged
and
when
they're
expected to do something.
It
kind of sounds like the public school system.
Well, there you go. You got another public bureaucracy that doesn't have to make a profit. It costs what it costs.
And that's another thing that we let creep in gradually. There was a little bit of pushback, but then you get shamed into, what, it's for the children. How could you say no to more millions of dollars for the children?
Now that you got these millions of dollars, you close the schools.
Yeah.
Because you're scared of the flu.
Right. And then everybody's outraged that you would expect the teachers to do their jobs or not get paid.
Unless it's illegal aliens. They got to go teach those kids.
Oh, right.
Well, the illegal aliens are getting bigger stimulus checks than the rest of us.
I don't know that that's been proven yet or not, but I have heard something like $15,000 checks.
I've been reading articles that point out something along those lines.
Well, and so how did, like you guys have said, how do you prove you're an illegal alien? Okay, I'm here illegally. Here's my paperwork. And then here's my other paperwork.
That's racist.
Right.
Here's my paperwork that I am an illegal alien.
Right. But wasn't the justification that they lost their jobs because of COVID? How did they prove they had jobs without their employers getting in trouble for having hired illegal aliens?
The quagmire.
Yes.
What a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. Oiled by our taxes and by our apathy.
And ran by hamsters.
Hamster power.
That apathy thing is what keeps getting to me. All of this is going on and I keep hearing people that think the way that we do and going, okay, somebody's going to stop this, right? We're going to stand up and we're going to stop this and we're going to redirect things. But that number of people who think like we do is so incredibly small, especially when they're pouring in new people and
getting
creating
smaller
their
all the
own
time.
Voting base by getting these people addicted to the government. I don't see any way of turning it around, and I don't mean to be the doomsday person in the room today because it's cold outside, but it doesn't seem to me like there are enough people in this country who know the history, who understand it, or who even have any semblance of common sense to say, wait a second, this is my stuff. This is my personal property. This is my personal choice. And you're coming in and telling me what to do, and you don't get to do that. And some document somewhere, I'm pretty sure, says that you can't do that.
Somewhere it says something about a chicken.
Well, and if we continue to see the influx of people coming across the border like they are now, it's going to be way worse then come next election season, because all of these illegal aliens are going to start voting Democrat, and Texas is going to become a blue state. And then it's done.
There's another aspect to that I just read on Breitbart this week, Democratic whiner, saying that it's not fair that the Dakotas should have more representation in the Senate than California. And you look at a little state like Wyoming with, 600,000 people? And we have two senators as well. And, of course, the instant gut reaction from the uneducated, unthinking masses are, that's not fair.
Mm.
What would be the incentive when they were trying to form the nation? What would be the incentive of, say, South Carolina to join a union and be subject to the voters of New York State who have no idea how things operate in their backyard? What would be the incentive to join this union? It'd be madness.
Right.
And if they managed to pull this off, packing the courts, bringing in new states like Washington, D.C. and others, what would be Wyoming's incentive to stay involved? We're just going to be completely bullied out of existence.
Besides the fact that that's a very troublingly ignorant argument, because that's the reason we have the Senate and the House, is that the Senate, everybody gets the same representation, no matter how much your population is, everybody gets two senators. The representatives are based on population. Duh, that's how they were trying to make it fair. So the reason they're picking on that is they're ignorant and they want more power. It doesn't make any sense if you know anything about the way the government was set up.
But most people don't. You see those video clips online all the time of people who go out on the street with a microphone and ask basic questions. Like we saw one recently where a guy was holding a map of the United States upside down and said, "What country is this?" And people were saying, "Asia? No, sweetie."
Hey, so we met her last time.
If you have an entire population who doesn't even know what our country looks like upside down, how do they know anything about the Senate and the House? How do they know how it's structured? All they hear is this barrage of, it's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair from the left. And they don't have any way to balance that out with reason, because they haven't been taught, because the people that are residents of our country are not even required to take the same civics test as people who are trying to get into this country legally. So who's voting?
God forbid you should have to pass tests or own property in order to vote. You know, you got to have some skin in the game, was the way it was originally set up.
Well, and I think that's why we're sitting here, because people need to know that. And it's when you talk about like Texas turning colors, that's our buffer.
Right.
And we're going to lose that if we just sit here and think, well, our representatives are all basically conservative. They're going to make sure nothing happens to our rights. We're going to be talking about what happened in the legislature this session and which ones of them are concerned about our rights and which ones of them don't really care whether we have any or not.
As long as they collect that paycheck.
I guess.
But Diane, you had a good point that is why we're doing what we're doing. Even though some days it feels completely pointless, that is why we're doing what we're doing. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from listeners saying, I didn't know this before. You guys are teaching me things I didn't know, and I appreciate it. We appreciate you listening. So far, you can listen to us on Podbean. We are also on Spotify. We just got on Apple Podcasts. We are working on getting a website set up. So follow us, like us, listen to us, whatever, and share. The more you share, the more people we can teach these things to. And that's not to say we're the only people with something to teach, but if you like what you're listening to, please share it with your friends.
We look forward to being in front of the blackboard for a long time.
Or the whiteboard.